Valerie Kaur is a prominent Sikh American interfaith activist, writer, and an award-winning filmmaker. She's the founding director of Groundswell at Auburn Theological Seminary. We've talked about that before. And I'm very happy to have Valerie Kaur join me right now on State of Belief Radio. Valerie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
In your recent Washington Post article titled "For Sikhs and Muslims, Fear After a Terror Attack," you make some very powerful points. I see you saying the fear starts after the suspects were identified as Muslims. Am I getting that right?
Well, I would say the fear even began when the explosions went off.
And explain that.
So I experienced the bombing as a crisis in two different ways. Let me say, like all Americans, I was grieving with Boston, a city I had called home for 3 years. I was north of Boston when the explosions went off. I had friends and family in lockdown by the end of the week. And so, like the whole nation, I was breathing a sigh of relief when the second suspect was captured. But like millions of Americans from Muslim, Arab, Sikh, and South Asian backgrounds, I was waiting, hoping, and praying the minute we heard about the news that we would not see the same hate, fear, and violence we saw after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Balbir Singh Sodhi was a family friend, a turban-wearing Sikh American man who was murdered in the thousands of hate crimes that erupted across the country in the week of 9/11. So there was reason to be afraid. And already we have seen echoes of the aftermath of that week. Already we have seen racial profiling of people for the color of their skin. We've seen retaliatory hate crimes. We've seen public officials calling for counterterrorism measures that single out Muslim and immigrant communities. But I will tell you, Reverend, that when I look back on the last 2 weeks, I do believe that we are not the same nation we were in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that our national leaders, starting with President Obama, you know, they've called for a commitment to stay true to our unity and diversity, not to rush to judgment of entire groups. And many voices have followed his lead. I remember I was so moved when Governor Deval Patrick said, "We will recover and heal if we turn to each other rather than on each other."
Yeah.
So I'm really hanging on to that hope in the coming weeks.
You know, Valerie, I made the comment this morning in another setting that I think even in the media, though it wasn't consistently across the media, but I thought the media in the early days after the bombing and on the day of the bombing really tried to do a very responsible job of not stereotyping at that point. And I saw that as a giant step forward.
I did as well. I was really moved to see how many leading voices in the media and in the government really followed this commitment to not rush to judgment. I believe that a new generation has really come of age in the last 12 years. Millennials who have far less tolerance for overt acts of racism and bigotry, and that's true across the country. I remember when Fox News commentator Eric Rush on the afternoon of the bombing tweeted that Muslims are evil, let's kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
There were many more voices online and otherwise who rose to challenge him, issuing statements of solidarity and unity. And so that also gives me quite a bit of hope.
Yeah. I want to be sure that our audience knows the perspective from which you speak. You've alluded to it briefly that after 9/11, you lost a dear friend as a result of misidentification and misunderstanding. But since 9/11, you have a uniquely long-range view on this whole subject. And I'd like for you, if you will, to talk a little bit about what you did after 9/11 that gives you such credibility and authority to talk about what needs to be done now.
I was a 20-year-old college student when September 11th happened. And after Balbir Singh Sodhi, the family friend, was murdered, I felt so helpless that I needed to do something. I mean, unlike the last 2 weeks, in the aftermath of 9/11, the hate crimes that were breaking out across the country were not being reported on national news. They were like desperate cries buried under this anthem of national unity. And so as a college student from a Sikh American background, you know, my family has lived in the United States for 100 years. My grandfather sailed by steamship from India to California in 1913. In 100 years of history, when 9/11 happened, people who looked like my grandfather, my brothers, my cousins, were automatically marked as suspicious, as foreign, as potentially terrorists, mostly because of the turbans and beards that men in our family wear, and our communities wear. And so as soon as that murder happened, I grabbed my camera, got in my car, and crossed the country to make a film called Divided We Fall, which became the first feature-length film on hate crimes after 9/11. And that led to a decade of activism and advocacy trying to combat incidents of racial profiling and hate crimes. Most recently, last August in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, a white supremacist walked into a Sikh Gurdwara and opened fire, murdering six Sikh Americans in what is now the largest race-based mass shooting in recent U.S. history. This has been part of a rising trend of hate crimes against these communities, and so I had every reason to brace and wait and prepare in the aftermath of the Boston bombing.
You, in your article, identify several hate-based incidents that have happened just in the past few days. We've both already shown our hand and thinking we've made progress, but remind us of what you've seen of expressions of hate just since the bombing.
On Monday afternoon, before a suspect was even identified, one man in the Bronx was beaten by a group of men who called him an Arab. On Wednesday, a Palestinian woman in Massachusetts was punched by a man who was screaming, "You are a terrorist. You are involved in the Boston explosion." Those violent hate crimes are two of a number of incidents we've heard across the country of Muslim, Arab, Sikh Americans who've been afraid to go outside, who have been moving with caution, who have been preparing their gurdwaras and mosques for any possible retaliation. All of that said, this is nowhere near the violence we saw in the aftermath of 9/11. So I believe that the greatest danger for America lies not in the streets, but in what our nation decides to do as a country in the weeks ahead. Already, Representative Peter King has demanded heightened surveillance of Muslims. Senators like Chuck Grassley has suggested that we should reconsider immigration reform, as if the attacks now mark all immigrants as automatically suspect and potentially terrorists. Senators Lindsey Graham and John McCain have already implied that we ought to curtail civil liberties by calling the suspect a U.S. citizen to be denied a defense attorney, labeled an enemy combatant, sent to Guantanamo. So these debates, which lie ahead of us, will really test us as Americans to see whether we'll go down the same road that we went down after 9/11, mm-hmm. or whether a different future is possible where we are not harming more people.
Valerie, I'd like to talk about your films for a minute and identify, if you can, some of the insights working on those projects have given you in discerning how to talk about this present situation.
Divided We Fall is the film that took me across the nation for most of my 20s. I traveled to more than 200 U.S. cities, screened the film at universities and colleges. And what moved me, the insights that I gained in that experience, was the way that young people, through stories, could see themselves and other people struggle. I remember in Chicago, an African-American man standing up and pointing to his braids and saying, "My braids are my turban." Hmm. I remember a gay man in New York standing up and saying, "I realize just as I fight for the right of gays to come out of the closet, I realize I have to fight for the rights of Sikhs to wear their turbans." And I remember a Japanese-American woman in Nebraska standing up and saying, "When my grandparents were in concentration camps during World War II, very few people stood up for them then. I will stand up for you now." Those gestures of solidarity made me realize that the Sikh American struggle, the Muslim American struggle, is bound up with the African-American, Latino, Native, LGBT, Jewish, many other community struggles, that our struggles are part of a greater movement for equality and dignity in America. It is the old way of fighting, that we fight for our own selves, our own issues, our own causes, that more and more we're realizing that we must stand together to make progress in this country. And I will say that you know, going back to what gives me hope is that an entire multi-faith movement for justice has risen out of the ashes of 9/11 the last 12 years, that we are networked, that we have access and social media tools to hold our public officials accountable and combat hatred, that Muslim, Sikh, and other community organizations have immediately used the infrastructure they've built over the last decade to condemn the bombing, to prevent hate violence. And as part of an interfaith movement, Groundswell is one network of nearly 100,000 people across different faiths and backgrounds who are coming together just this week to organize, to hold our officials accountable, to help our nation stay united. And everyday people can get involved in a way that we could not in the days after 9/11. So if folks listening want to go to groundswell-movement.org, you can join us.
After listening to you, Valerie, it brings to mind something that I've said to a lot of colleagues in interreligious circles since 9/11, that I honestly think the Sikh community has done one of the best jobs of any of the world's religions in the United States in helping people understand the Sikh tradition, helping people to know something of the Sikh character. And I think you've done it exceedingly well. I saw it in a presentation on Capitol Hill with the Department of Transportation. I've seen it in some of the books that have been written. And I wonder, not in a paternalistic, but in a collegial sort of way, if you would say, what is it that the Sikhs have done in identifying themselves that would be helpful to other religions, to Muslims, Buddhists, all other religions, in identifying themselves so people feel like they know you and want to be supportive of you?
I believe that we must lead with stories, that stories can break down the walls dividing us and them, that stories can help us see ourselves in one another. I remember the last interview I did for Divided We Fall was in Punjab, India, where I interviewed Joginder Kaur, the widow of Balbir Singh Sodhi. She was in tears when I found her, and I remember I had to put down my list of questions, because how could I ask this mourning widow anything? She was so heartbroken after the death of her husband, killed in hate in America. And I did ask her, what would you like to tell the people of America? And I was expecting bitterness or anger, but she said, thank you. Tell them thank you. When I came to Phoenix for my husband's funeral, they came out in the thousands, Christian, Muslim, Jew. They cared for me. They gave me their love. Tell them thank you. And as I boarded the plane back for the U.S., I realized that the people of Phoenix came out in the thousands back in 2001 because the Sikh community had told the city their story. The Sikh community had told the story of Balbir Singh Sodhi, how he had come to the U.S. to escape religious persecution, how he would never see the eyes of his grandchildren again, how his widow's heart was now broken, that his story was what caused people to come out and break a cycle of violence so that the widow herself could forgive. And it's the same story that I saw the people of Oak Creek tell the American public after the massacre last August that caused us to receive love and support from all corners of the country. I remember I saw young people who had just seen their parents murdered inside of a house of worship have the courage to step before the sea of cameras and not just talk about their heartbreak, but tell their stories as young Americans, as young Sikh Americans who are drawing from their faith tradition to respond not with hate, not with vengeance, but with love. I think going forward, the more that all of us, communities of color, faith communities, can lead with stories and listen to one another's stories, the more we can see ourselves part of one movement.
It's a beautiful statement. Tell us, before we go, what kind of organizing are you doing now in the aftermath of the bombings and the arrest? And do you see any groups utilizing Groundswell yet in this regard?
We are in conversation with our partners, with our colleagues, with advocates across the country, listening closely to what is most needed. You will see action on Groundswell's platform in the next few days. So, again, people can go to groundswell-movement.org to get involved. But I will say that I think that that action is coming, and action is coming in ways that we have not seen before. I'll give you an example. The day after the bombing, I was with students at Colby College in Maine. I was asked to talk to these students about hate crimes since 9/11. I was asked to talk to them about the mass shooting in Oak Creek last fall. But when I walked into the classroom, these students were hurting. Many of them were from Boston. They had friends still in the hospital. One girl had was a dancer with shrapnel in her leg, wondering if they were going to amputate. When I walked into that classroom, these students, I was expecting, you know, them to express heartbreak, indignation, perhaps anger. But they turned around and they showed me their Twitter and Facebook feeds. They showed me the ways that they were standing up against bigotry and for unity and diversity. On the same day that one of the senators from Maine, Susan Collins, was openly speculating that Islamic extremism was responsible for the attacks, before we had any evidence at all, these young people knew better. And they were asking me, okay, what do we do now? We're here, we're networked, we're ready, how do we take action? Millions of young people, millions of people of all generations like them are ready to act. And I know many people in the multi-faith movement will be providing blueprints for action. Groundswell will be one of them.
Valerie Kerr is prominent Sikh American interfaith activist, writer, and an award-winning filmmaker. She's the founding director of Groundswell at Auburn Theological Seminary, and she's written a most insightful piece for the Washington Post on the very real fears some of our fellow Americans are facing since the revelation that the Tsarnaev brothers identified as Muslim. For Sikhs and Muslims, fear after a terror attack. That's the headline. You need to read it, and we'll link to it from stateofbelief.com. Valerie, I really want to thank you for making the time to share your insights with us today. You've done remarkable work, and it's paying off in the insights that you can share with all of us. Thanks for being with us here today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.